Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. Welcome back to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week. It's SiriusXM 129 on the Catholic Channel. I'm Kevin Clark, here with Tim Reedy, and our special guest to finish off the show is our regular columnist, Bill McGarvey. Bill is, you've done so many things, Bill. I can't even get through this list of things that you've done. You're an editor, writer, musician, founder and editor at one point of BustedHalo.com. You've written the Freshman Survival Guide, Soulful Advice for Studying, Socializing, and Everything in Between. Now, in its fifth printing?
What? It's actually, well,
are you an underachiever? Come on.
No, it's actually inferred. That's an old, I should have read that. It's a lot more, yeah. We saw a lot. That's about 4 years old, the book. So it's
My book is in its half printing.
Is it?
It's first half printing.
You
got to
write these things that are renewable every graduation season. That's why we just did an updated version
perfect,
in April.
It's actually perfect stocking stuffer for your freshman.
Yeah, Mama didn't raise any dummies.
Yeah, good job. And, but, you know, we don't talk about your musical career too much, but you've composed how many songs?
I've made a bunch of records with my own and with other folks, but I mean, as a songwriter for years, and now I'm actually just doing a project. A guy that used to work here named Jim Brewer is a comedian.
Oh, the comedian?
Yeah, he has a record of kind of heavy metal comedy. And my good friend Mike, who I've co-written and produced with, is like the director, musical director of his band. And he and Mike and I just made a little record of, you know,
Jim Brewer, the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, yeah. We've done a bunch of shows with them, and we're doing a show, I think, in Long Island soon. And
awesome.
Just a little duo where we're doing basically classic 80s metal song filtered through singer-songwriter Americana. So it's like a really mellow kind of
so
versions of Metallica.
Wilco meets Metallica.
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, or Judas Priest or AC/DC.
Wittalica, I guess we'll call it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Wittalica, right. I like that.
Yeah. Well, you,
so
TM,
clever.
Trademark.
It's really hard to bring it up after that last conversation. I'm really feeling
like yeah.
And now we're going to talk about my column, which is a, you know.
Well, we're not, domestic violence is a very serious issue, and we hope everyone took it seriously. But
I wrote that number down, to be honest. That's a good number to have, because I think I do.
You mean that 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233 number?
I've met people who in my life who, that would be a very good thing to have, and you just come across it. That's a good number to have, I think. So I actually did, when she was talking, I put that in.
And you mentioned your last column, you were writing about AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the reasons we brought you on is because it was a very popular column, drew a lot of attention, comments. So, I mean, this is a story people are familiar with, you know, the story of AA. But why do you think it has the staying power and it kind of invites this kind of conversation?
You know, ever since I was at Busted Halo, I've been fascinated by the folks I've met over the years as a musician in the arts world in New York. Invariably, the people I've met that have been in recovery for a while, and to be clear, I'm not in recovery, but I've done a lot of studying of it and talk. But the people I've met through in recovery are some of the most grounded folks I know, especially if they've been in it for a while. And they're not telling war stories. If you talk to them, they have a really deep appreciation of who they are and what they're in all their flawed glory, I guess. And I've always just thought, geez, this looks a lot like what religion should be. You have to get together, because you'll die if you don't. And you're sharing of yourself. It's a form of communion. And I just always felt that this was sort of a proto-religious idea that Bill W. and Dr. Bob kind of hit upon. And the beauty of it is not self-promotional. It's not evangelical. It's really about, it's not about promotion. It's about attraction. People go to it because essentially one of the tenets in the big book is, you know, if you like what you see in us, here's what we do. Here's how we've done it. And that's it. So I just was fascinated because the article came out of a lot of the conversations we always have about, boy, people are leaving religion, people aren't going. The truth is people aren't affiliating across the board anymore. People are not affiliating with political parties. They're not affiliating with civic organizations at the same level. It's changing. And we can talk about that, and they're important conversations to have. But I also believe, I guess my faith is grounded in something that I think the church ultimately has, and I think Pope Francis is right that if we're a field hospital for those who are wounded, there's an attraction to that shows an empathy and a humility that I think is profound.
And this is in part what AA does by, you know, I guess, how do people reach that point? I guess it's when you kind of hitting the ground, rock bottom, where they feel like there's no other way for them to survive without kind of sharing this experience.
Yeah, the folks I've met who have been drug addicts and alcoholics, and I'm sure there are listeners you have out there that have gone through this or have family members that have, my sense is they get to a point where their life no longer works. And people think it's like, oh, they lose their job. There's all those things, but at some point, there's a moment of, I can't do this. And it was some, and I think there's a moment of grace that breaks in some level and say, I have to change. I have to change. Now, look, I mean, the truth is, a lot of folks in recovery, people in recovery, would tell you this themselves. These are difficult people because they're then what they would call dry drunks, and they can be. It's not simply taking away the symptom or the agent or the alcohol or the drugs doesn't necessarily cure you, but it is sort of a first step toward. Again, a recognition that you are not God. And as I said, to me, that's the first step on any adult religious journey. And a lot of what I've been writing about lately, I think, is about that. I think the conversation about faith in America is often really simplistic. And the conversation, I've been writing about this all year, but how many times do I have conversations with people where they find out that you're Catholic and you go, oh, boy, I used to be this. And then they tell you about their version of religion and God, and you sort of say, I don't believe in that God either, and I understand why you wouldn't be a part of that, wouldn't be part of that faith tradition. So I think a lot of folks, understanding of faith, if you were 12 years old in your relationship at work or marriage or whatever, it would be a problem. But a lot of people in their relationship to faith and religion stopped when they were confirmed or bar mitzvahed or whatever, and they don't have an adult version of it. And that's a profound loss, I think. People might reject it, but to come at it with an adult eyes and not as a child is a different thing.
Yeah, it seems like the only way we get the adults back in is when they have children, mm-hmm. and they feel like, oh, that's the checkbox I've got to hit. Mm-hmm. I've got to get my kids into Catholic school or to get them confirmed or obviously baptized.
But those numbers they believe aren't going to be as strong either, though. It's interesting. Yeah. And again,
I can look around
changing.
My own family,
sure.
And tell you that.
Exactly, yeah. Right. No, we all, I mean, yeah, no, it's very true.
So what can the church learn? I mean, are we talking about how do we, you know, use Alcoholics Anonymous as a exemplar? I mean, what lessons can... I mean, they're the field hospital, right? They're the living, actual field hospital.
I think in a very extreme way. I don't think everybody suffers in that same way, right? Yeah. And so, or is profound. I think the other article I wrote, I wrote an article before this about suffering and basically the notion that we're going to suffer. And I was talking about...
Yeah, hey, Bill, offer it up.
Exactly. For Catholic,
up,
right? Save it forever, right? But I think people don't even recognize their suffering sometimes. We are able to distract ourselves so mightily with all of our screens and all of our busyness, quote unquote, that we can sometimes not even recognize the existential suffering we're really going through because we've kind of mollified or sort of rubbed off some of this sort of distraction on us, and it can keep us from really any greater depth. In terms of programmatic, I'm not sure there's any easy. I think it's as much about tone as anything, and I think that's what's so profound about what Francis has said. Again, the field hospital notion, and then who am I to judge? It's hard. It's generally not a programmatic approach. It's often a tonal approach, and a humility and an ability, a welcome.
Just not turning anyone away.
Well, yeah, a sense of welcome. I think it's something that America does very well, and I think a lot of places already are doing really well. And I think it's something that we just turning our tone and our attitude a little bit and maybe coming at it with a little humility and a little is never – I don't think that's ever a bad – to listen to people's questions, to listen and to see where their lives are is an important thing, I think.
Well, what you said before, Bill, was very interesting, that some of the most grounded people you know are people who have gone through this process. So not all of us, you know, have gone through this process, but we can learn from those who have.
Sure.
And
yep.
That's, I mean, you've had the experience of encountering people, perhaps, you know, in your line of work. But those of us who have not, I mean... There's still ways to learn about these stories, ways to kind of take lessons away from them.
Again, I've been fascinated with it for a long time. So I saw this documentary on Bill W. The fascinating thing about Bill W. Bill
this is
Wilson,
the founder.
So he'll find. I've learned about my old songwriting partner. You're one of my songwriting partners. I don't know. He's anonymous, but you would hear him say, "Are you a friend of Bill's at a party?" And that was a code word. I was like, "Well, yeah, you're a friend of mine." And of course, that's a code word that people will use if they're in the program.
You know, we use that meaning you.
Exactly.
It's a whole different.
Because we should come up with a different code word for me. But I do think the fascinating thing about Bill W. is, and maybe this is one of the early sort of one of the early sort of fans of the program was also not an alcoholic, but was a Jesuit priest who, I apologize, his name escapes me right now. But he learned about the early Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and studied it, and he said, you must have studied the spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius, because this book is directly reflects the Ignatian journey. And they were like, no, we'd never heard of it. And so that was the beauty of it, is like we're uncovering something that's naturally just part of how human beings learn and how human beings hopefully grow. So there is, and there is some talk I've heard from people who are involved in AA that, and from a Catholic perspective, perhaps that they thought Bill W. actually wanted it to be a Catholic Christian thing. I think wisely, the people around him, that's another thing, it's a very collegial thing. They said, no, it has to be a higher power as you understand
keep
it.
Keep the doors open.
To
why?
Keep it open, yeah. But in my sense is he was definitely, he was an interesting fellow. But there's the big book, and there's just a lot out there written on him. I read a book by, Professor Kurtz, K-U-R-Z, that was really good. I quoted in my article. But really, if you just Google an Alcoholics Anonymous literature, there's tons of it out there. And the books and the documentary on these people are fascinating journeys of lives, of spiritual journeys, of real spiritual journeys and depth of despair, back to hope, through fellowship, through each other, through relationship.
And now, how do people try to, you know, sort of access that spiritual wisdom without actually, I mean, I'm just trying to think practically, you can't just go lurk at AA meetings
would not be appropriate. You're right. No, I think my point was simply is not that, I think what we have to learn from it is that, again, it strips away what we often talk, and I'm sure we've done on this channel with you, I've done it myself, is we get into lots of in-depth kind of inside baseball conversations. But what AA and those programs do really meet people where they are. And my point is simply that it's not simply about going out and going to an AA meeting, but that fundamental notion of I am not God is sort of that first question that I think is part of any adult spiritual journey. And I think that when somebody enters the door of a church, you hope that the feeling and the tone that they get is a sense that this is a place where, yes, we are not God, but we are trying to be in a relationship with the Almighty and the Eternal and the Transcendent.
But I think one of your things you're talking about, Bill, is like a scenario, a situation, a context where people are talking about, you know, deep emotions and are sharing things in a very intimate way that, you know, frankly, going to Mass every week is not something you can access.
It's true.
So is it a small Christian community? Are there ways that the Christian context can learn from that and make it part of their kind of live faith?
I agree. I have a cousin who is actually raised Catholic and is still Catholic, but married a woman who was Baptist. And he still goes to Catholic Church, but he is part of a fellowship out of the church his wife also attends. They kind of do both, but which is a small Christian community. And I can see from my cousin that small Christian community is probably the most profound thing that's happened to him in his adult life. And I've been in faith sharing groups as well that can also have very profound, because they are really, and that's the genius of a lot of these mega churches, right? It's really not about Sunday services with 20,000 people are good.
It's a spectacle.
It's a spectacle. Yeah. But the people often miss that what they all, the real component of that is that they have Wednesday night faith sharing, which is all, it's all about the accountability of your small group, which in some ways, I haven't done a study of this, but there is a mirroring quality to what I think the sponsor in AA does, is which is keep an eye on each other. Hey, how are you doing? Challenge each other. I see you really acting this way. What's going on? And that is, I think, and I know Catholic churches do the same thing in terms of small Christian communities, faith-sharing communities, Bible study groups, whatever you want to call it. If they're done right, they can be really powerful parts of people's spiritual journey. I know they have been in mine, yeah.
It also seems maybe a quick lesson is the patience of AA, sort of waiting for people to be ready to tell their story, ready to to hear the story, to listen. So the patience follows through to listening, not commenting or not rushing to fix this or
you can't really. I mean, they really, that's the beauty of it. It's not prescriptive in this. Well, it is prescriptive in the sense that it says you really have to serve others. You have to get out of your own way. You have to work the steps. But it is a lifelong process. Bill W.'s whole life, there's great in this documentary called Bill W., there's audio, he's absolutely revered by them, and he kind of spent a lot of his life trying to get away from that because he realized so deeply. It's like the same thing as Francis said, who am I? I'm a sinner.
Yeah.
He was very clear about the fact that I am not the person, I mean, I am a drunk. See, they would call that, I said it in the article, they called themselves, yeah, we're drunks. And
it's like I'm a sinner. It's sort of the same thing.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
By the grace of God and you people together, I won't drink today, and I'll be that. But they looked upon it was definitely the grounding of his longer spiritual journey, which had some really interesting. I don't want to get into it here, but some interesting twists and turns in his life. But it was a fascinating. The story of AA is a fascinating journey that's still going about how, I mean, think the organization is sort of incorruptible. You know, it doesn't, it's not money making. And
you can't advertise.
They didn't advertise.
You can't advertise it anymore.
And you can't. And so it's really like, if this works, there's something just beautiful about that to me.
All right.
Well, we'll refer people to Bill's Common America Media. And of course, you can learn about Alcoholics Anonymous and that documentary online. That is it for America This Week. Thank you for being with us. If you like what you've been hearing, you can join us at America. As I said, our website is americamagazine.org. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And to subscribe to America Magazine, please call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533. I'm Tim Reedy for Kevin Clark. Thank you and have a good day.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.